would read mantras. Avisannihitam guhacharan nama mahatpadamatraitat samarpitam yejat pranan nimishaccha yadetat janatha hadasadvarenyam param vijnanat yadvarishtam prajanam yadarchimad yadanubhyonucha yasmin lokanihita lokinascha tadetat aksharam brahma sapranastaduvang manah tadetat satyam tadamrutam tadvedhavyam saumya vidhi danugrihi tvaupanishadam mahastram sharam hyupasa nishitam sandhayita ayam yatad bhavagate na chetasa laksham tadevaksharam saumya vidhi pranavo dhanushsharo hyatma brahma tallaksham uchyate apramattena vedhavyam saravattanmayo bhavet yasmin dyav prithivi chantariksham utam manasah pranischa sarvaihi tamevaikam janatha atmanam anyavacho vimunchatha amrutasyesha setuhu araivarathanabhau samhatayatra nadyah sayeshontascharate bahudha jayamanah omityevam dhyayata atmanam swastivah paraya tamasah parastat yas sarvajna sarvavit yas seisha mahima bhuvi divye brahma purehesha vyomnyatma pratishthitah manomayah prana sharira neta pratishthitonne hridayam sannidhaya tadvijnanena paripashyanti dhiraha anandarupamamrutam yadvibhati. Okay, so in the previous verse, previous mantra, yas sarvajna sarvavit, I explained the whole verse. Only one thing I have to tell you. Sarvajna means omniscient, all-knowing. Sarvavit also means omniscient, all-knowing. So why does Upanishad use two words? So, of course, all knowledge is consciousness. The source of all knowledge is consciousness. But why two words? We have to understand. The wise person, a jnani, who knows the reality obtaining as one's own self, also is called sarvavit. Sarvajnaha. A jnani is said to be a sarvajnaha. Bhagavan is sarvajnaha. Jnani also said to be sarvajnaha. When jnani knows Bhagavan, and jnani discovers Bhagavan in the form of reality, obtaining as one's own essential nature, then a person like jnani also said to be sarvajnaha. Why? Because the knowing Brahman, brahmajnaha, brahmajnaha, brahmavit, the knower of Brahman, knower of Atma, is the knower of the truth, is the knower of Bhagavan. He is said to be all-knowing. That doesn't mean a jnani, the person who knows the reality, knows Brahman, knows everything, all his chemistry, biology, botany. No. Still, a wise person will be ignorant of other things. Unless he studied chemistry, physics. Okay. A wise person, so the wise person whom the Shastram reveres as wise person, a jnani, a person of wisdom, is the one who knows the reality. Whereas he does not need to be informed in other disciplines. Still, he will continue to be ignorant of other things. But still, he is called Sarvajnaha. Why? Because knowledge of the truth of everything, by knowing the truth, one knowing the truth is as good as knowing everything else. If you know the water, wave is known as it were. If you know the water, ocean is known as it were. Because water is the truth of the ocean. Similarly, knowing the truth of the universe is as good as knowing the whole Jagat. Because it's a reality. Therefore, a Jnani is also revered as Sarvajna, all-knowing. Because he knows what the one thing, by knowing which everything else becomes known as it were, everything else becomes accomplished as it were, by knowing which the person becomes free from the bondage of karma, he discovers the absolute happiness. Therefore, Jnani is also revered as Sarvajnaha. But Bhagavan alone is known as Sarvavit. No human being, a Jnani, also cannot be called Sarvavit. Sarvavit means what? The one who is the source of all knowledge, of all detailed knowledge of all disciplines. Okay? How many of people get any number of PhDs or postdoctoral fellowships? All knowledge is possible because of the presence of Bhagavan in the form of consciousness. Therefore, the consciousness, Bhagavan, is a name given to the only reality, abstract reality, formless reality, obtaining in the form of pure consciousness. And it is this consciousness, because of the presence of consciousness alone, any knowledge of anything is possible. Therefore, the consciousness looked upon as Ishvara is said to be the source of all knowledge of all disciplines in all details. Therefore, Sarvavit, Bhagavan alone is said to be the Sarvavit. Sarvavit means the source of all knowledge. Sarvavit is a Jnani cannot be called Sarvavit. Bhagavan is Sarvavit, Bhagavan is Sarvajna. A Jnani can be called Sarvajna, but not as a Sarvavit. Okay? One small thing I want to tell you before, I have told you now. Okay. Now, next mantra. Mano mayav prana sharira neta. Pratishthitone hridayam sannidhaya. As we have already seen, this Manomayaha and Prana Sharira Neta are two qualifications attributed to Atma. What is Atma? All pervasive reality, obtaining as the innermost essence of all the beings, thereby implied by the term Atma. And who alone is given the qualification of Ishwaraha Bhagavan? So Bhagavan in the form of consciousness alone lends life to entire Sukshma Shariram of all, obtaining in all the physical bodies. And who alone lends existence, consciousness and sentiency, pervading the entire mind. Therefore, is two qualifications are given, Manomayaha and Prana Sharira Neta. And this Atma, the all-pervasive reality consciousness, known as enlivener of the subtle body, the one which is soaked in mind and makes the mind remain soaked in consciousness, that Atma, Anne Pratishthitaha, Pratishthitaha Anne, is established in where? As in the physical mind, obtaining within the heart, in the physical body. So, Hridayam Sannidhaya Pratishthitaha Anne, Hridayam Sannidhaya Pratishthitaha. Anne Pratishthitaha. Hridayam Sannidhaya. So, Anne means in the physical body. Annamaye Shari Koshe. Anne means Annamaye Koshe. Which means in the physical body, that is Thula Shariram, which is otherwise said to be Annamaya Kosha. In the physical body, Hridayam Sannidhaya. Sannidhaya means what? Having installed. See, Sannidhaya. Sannidhanam means installing. Installation, installing means sannidhanam. Sannidhadati. Dadhati nidadhati. Sannidhada. Nidadhati sannidhadati. Verb. So sannidhaya, having installed the heart. Hridayam sannidhaya means what? Having installed the physical heart, anne, in the middle of the physical body, and in that hridayam, in that mind, in that physical heart, the mind is installed. And in that mind, consciousness is installed as it were. Okay, installed means not consciousness fixed there. But the heart is installed really in the middle of the physical body. And in the heart, mind is installed, that is true. But consciousness, all pervasive consciousness, which is pervades the physical body, which pervades the mind, which pervades the heart, which pervades everywhere. And that consciousness is available for recognition in that mind, which is installed in the heart, which is installed in the physical body. Therefore, Atma consciousness is as though installed in the mind. Okay. Anne hridayam sannidhaya, having installed the heart, physical heart, in the middle of the physical body, in that heart, the mind is installed, and in that mind installed in the physical heart, this Atma is available for recognition as though it is installed there. As what? As the Sakshi, as the witness consciousness. So, in the Upanishad mantra makes it very clear, consciousness is distinct from all the thoughts which rise, which remain, which resolve. When the mind is functional, it is called, we call it waking state. When there is knowledge of the self-existence in terms of I am, when all the thoughts are possible, the mind is functional and active, it is called waking state. And there also, consciousness is very much there without winking its eyes as the witness of the waking state and all the arriving, departing thoughts, lending existence to the thoughts. Okay, that's why, because of the non-arriving, non-departing consciousness alone, when the thoughts rise, when the thoughts arrive, experiences are possible, cognitions are possible, emotions are possible, desires such as anger, jealousy, hate, etc. are possible. The possibility of all mental functions when in the presence of thoughts is because of the permanent presence of consciousness. And that consciousness is what? Sakshi Chaitanyam. The witness consciousness is distinct from the witnessed arriving, departing cognitions, emotions and thoughts in the waking state. And the dream state also, the same consciousness continues to be there as the witness of the dream world, the dream thoughts, the dream individual, dream world. That is why you're able to recollect the dream experience and then analyze the dream the next day morning. The same witness. So the waking universe disappears. The dream world is projected by the thoughts, subconscious mind in the mind. And then also when the waking universe goes, dream universe comes, but Sakshi doesn't change. Same Sakshi continues to be there. The waking universe goes, Sakshi continues to be there, witnessing the dream world in dream. And in deep sleep state, dream world also disappears, waking world also disappears. Why? Because the perception of the world does not take place. Internal world in dream world, nor is the external world, is witnessed. No world is experienced in the waking state, in the deep sleep state, because the world is not perceived. The world must be perceived. Only then knowledge of the world can happen. The cognitions pertinent to the world can happen. Then why the world is not, knowledge of the world doesn't happen? knowledge of the existence of the world is not there. Knowledge of the existence of the self also is not there in deep sleep state, because the perception of the self and the world doesn't happen in deep sleep state, because the sense organs are not non-functional. Sense organs are non-functional because the thoughts do not rise. The thoughts are resolved. Thoughts are resolved because the mind is non-functional. Therefore, whenever the thoughts do not rise, mind is non-functional, we call it a deep sleep state of the mind. And there also the consciousness obtains as the witness, and then the experiencelessness becomes experience, obtaining in a deep sleep state. And the witness, the one who witnesses the blankness of the mind, consciousness continues to be there as the witness of the blankness of the mind. Therefore, Sakshi Chaitanyam is distinct from the three different states of mind, which are three different states of experience, which are constantly discontinuous and also they mutually exclusive. Consciousness is what? Distinct witness. Therefore, it is as though in consciousness is there, as though installed, because always available. Why? Consciousness is all pervasive, unmoving. Therefore, there's never a time consciousness is not available for recognition. Okay? This is the Sakshi Chaitanyam. Now, the next question is, read the mantra. It will be very nice for you to remember. Manomaya prana sharira neta pratishthitah pratishthito ne hridayam sannidhaya tadvijnanena paripashyanti dhira. And who are the people who recognize that consciousness? Paripashyanti dhiraha paripashyanti. The people who recognize that consciousness, who have the clear knowledge, who are able to discern the consciousness from the thoughts, who can recognize pure consciousness, not as an object, as the very surupma of the I, who claim consciousness as the truth of I, those are the people said to be dhiraha, wise people. So dhiraha, paripashyanti. Okay. Now, dhiraha paripashyanti. Now, dhiraha means a wise person. Who is the dhiraha? Dhiyam rati iti dhiraha. The one who protects his mind is called protector of the mind. Is the one who is discriminate. Okay. The person of discriminative understanding, the person of discriminative knowledge, who is capable of protecting his mind from the phenomenon called fear for good, is said to be dhiraha, dhim rati, bhayat rati. The wise person who discovers the truth, consciousness as the self, who claims consciousness as this truth of I, as I am consciousness, that person becomes free from fear, because for him, he knows that I am the truth, everything else is mithya, and I am the truth which lends existence to, who lends existence to even the phenomenon called fear. Therefore, and he is said to be dhiraha. And this person of consciousness from the material, not only the body, but also from the thoughts. And this discerning consciousness from the thoughts is not physical, it is cognitive. He is capable of cognitively, intellectually discerning, separating consciousness from the body, mind, and complex. Okay, this discerning consciousness is something to be done in terms of knowledge, in terms of understanding. Okay. Now, This is the example given by Pujya Swamiji. It's a very important lesson. Please listen to me carefully. Suppose, imagine I hold a pen in this, okay? I hold a pen in my hand. I don't know whether you are able to see me or not. Can you see? You can't see. Make sure the thing. You can't see now because it's my this virtual comp. Okay. So now you can see a pen in my hand. And there's a yellow lid. It's a pen, isn't it? Now, this pen is shining in my hand. You all can see the pen I'm holding. And now, when you say, you're all experiencing pen that I'm holding, what you mean is that you are experiencing actually two factors. When you say you're experiencing the pen in my hand, you're experiencing two factors. And the two factors are mixed. It's a mixture of two factors you're experiencing. Okay? You're not experiencing, now I won't even show my hand. I just show you my pen, the pen alone. I just show you just the pen without showing my hand. So you see now you're experiencing only two factors in terms of pen. The mixture of two factors, the pen and the light in which the pen shines. The room is very dark here. There's no light at all. Then you cannot see me, nor can you see my body, nor can you see this pen. But now you can see me, you can see this pen also. And you're experiencing the pen. And here, the two factors involved means one is the pen and the inseparable light in which the pen shines. Okay? You can never experience any opaque thing without being mixed with the light. You cannot say you're experiencing only the pen. You may tend to say, okay, if I ask you what are you experiencing now, you can say you're experiencing the pen, but still you are not experiencing only the pen, the pure pen. You're experiencing two factors which are inseparably together. It is light and the illumining light and the illumined pen. Okay. In fact, we are always of this tendency, of the nature of, we are used to the habit of taking only the opaque things which shine in the light. Now we can say, if you ask you what do I hold, what do you experience, you will immediately say we are all experiencing the pen. But you will not even pay any attention to the light and you take the light for really granted. Okay. Why? Because when you see the pen or when you see any opaque thing, you take the light as an integral part of the pen. You take the light in the presence of which alone opaque thing shines as an integral part of the opaque thing. Okay. Now, This light, which is inseparable from the opaque thing, like pen, etc., is definitely not the part of this pen. It is not the product of this pen. So light is not the product of any opaque thing. Light is not part of any opaque thing. Light is not any property of this opaque thing. Okay? But light is all pervasive and light is not limited by this one opaque thing which shines in the light. Light is not limited by the opaque thing, any opaque thing which shines in his presence. But light pervades any opaque thing, light pervades this pen, light can pervade any opaque thing, and it is at the same time that the thing which shines in light can go, still light can continue to be there. Which means light is an independent entity which is not dependent on the opaque thing for its existence. Okay. At the same time, the light is completely distinct and different entity, independent entity. There's nothing to do with any opaque thing like this pen. But still, we cannot really remove the light. Physically, we cannot remove the light. Physical scraping of the light is not possible. Therefore, what do? We only cognitively, intellectually, we grasp the fact that light is something independent, distinct from the opaque thing. Light is distinct from the opaque thing. It is not distant, but distinct from the opaque thing. Similarly, in the same way, this consciousness. Now, in the mind also, in every cognition, we have cognitions, we have experiences of so many things, experience of elements, experience of elementals, experience of activities, experience of pain and pleasure, experience of emotions. So many experiences are there. Every experience involves two factors. One is vritti and consciousness. But the vrittis are many which come and go. But consciousness is there. Consciousness and vritti, consciousness and mind are inseparable. You cannot scrape the consciousness separate and take it from the mind. But intellectually you can discern consciousness from the thought. Okay. Whenever there's experience, what does it mean? Conscious, in the presence of consciousness, when the thoughts are present, the experiences happen. In the presence of consciousness, the thoughts are not there, experiences don't happen. So consciousness, the experience is not there, consciousness still continues to be there. The relevant thoughts are not there. Okay, and that which does not come and go, which is always there, in whose presence thoughts come and go, in whose presence thoughts become contribute for the formation of cognitions and experiences, and that consciousness is implied by the term Atma, and that consciousness alone is the truth of I. Okay, this is the lesson we need to understand. Okay. Similarly, now tad vijnanena dhiraha paripashyanti. So dhiraha, as I already told you, dhyam rati iti dhiraha, is also a person of subtle intellect. The person who has intellectual sharpness. The person's intellectual sharpness, also emotional stability, that person alone is capable of discerning consciousness. Okay. In fact, discerning consciousness. See, the physical body, that person can see consciousness. One who discerns consciousness and understands, that person can see afterwards Atma everywhere. Okay. So, the consciousness, sentiency obtains in the body. But consciousness, therefore we think, consciousness is in the body means what? Consciousness, even though consciousness is available for recognition in the mind, consciousness is not a part of the matter. Material body maintains complex. And understanding this consciousness is dependent on intellectual sharpness. Therefore, Upanishad says, Sukshma Buddhayaha Dhiraha, the people of intellectual sharpness, and they are capable of discerning consciousness from material mind. Okay. In fact, just as many people hold on to this view, even modern scientists holds on to the view that they mistake the manifestation of consciousness as origination of consciousness, like Buddhists. Okay. And that is why scientist is of the view that consciousness is produced out of matter. Which means the scientists have not yet arrived at what exactly consciousness is. It is our Upanishads. It is the Vedanta Shastram alone has done this intellectual cognitive separation of consciousness from the matter. It is not simply discerning the consciousness cognitively. In fact, once we discern the consciousness cognitively from the arriving departing thoughts as a non-arriving, non-departing, subtlest phenomenon, truth, then it's also important for us to understand another fact that there is no God, Bhagavan, Ishvara, other than this consciousness. It is this consciousness which we distinguish, which we discern from the thoughts and understand that as we claim it as our own, the truth of the individual as truth of I, the consciousness is Bhagavan Ishwaraha. And therefore, it says, Tadvijnanena, by discerning consciousness from the thoughts, claiming consciousness as the truth of I, then Dhiraha Paripashyanti. They see, wise people see the truth, consciousness as the only truth of the whole Jagat, implied by the term Paramatma, Parambrahma. Okay, Tadvijnanena, by carefully discerning consciousness, they also see that consciousness as Shankaracharya says, Paramatmanam Pashyanti. They understand that consciousness as the absolute only self of all the beings known as God. And then next question is what? Where do the wise people recognize consciousness? Consciousness is all pervasive. Consciousness is everywhere. Consciousness is in the body. Consciousness is everywhere. But still, they recognize consciousness in the mind first. Later on, wise people who have recognized consciousness as claimed consciousness as the truth of I, then they are able to see consciousness in the entire world, in all the bodies, in everybody's body, in everyone's body, in all. How do they say? In any living creature, okay, in the body of any living being, in the body of any living being, life itself is possible because of the presence, manifestation of consciousness. The consciousness manifest alone is looked upon as Bhagavan. The pure consciousness is implied by the term Brahma. The consciousness which is available for recognition in living beings is given the name, is said to be manifest consciousness. The pure consciousness is not available for recognition, is non-recognizable. Please understand this important lesson. Pure consciousness is not non-recognizable. Only manifest consciousness is recognizable. And the consciousness is manifest as knowledge, as I am, this world is. Okay, the consciousness is manifest in thoughts as I am, then there's knowledge, I am, this world is. That manifest consciousness is recognizable. The pure consciousness is non-recognizable. So non-recognizability of consciousness should not be mistaken for non-existent. Okay? That is why, and this consciousness is the truth, consciousness is the Bhagavan, therefore there is no being, living being, which doesn't have Bhagavan in the form of consciousness. That is why even a mosquito deserves namaskara. Any living creature deserves namaskara. Whether you do namaskaram to mosquitoes or not, that's why we do Rudra Paranam. Rudra, you do namaskaram to all the non-living things also. And in fact, the very culture of saying vanakkam, namaskaram to other person is because namaskara is offered to Bhagavan in the form of conscious being in everyone's body. Not the physical body, not the dirty mind, not the, unhappy, the jealous, the mind with all impurities. No. Namaskara is offered to that pure consciousness which is untainted by any of these thoughts, etc. Because of the presence of which the life is possible. Okay. Nowadays, people are talking about highly of this social distancing. Even in those days when Pujya Swamiji was teaching, and he used to tell this very much, Namaste is a safe thing, safe way of greeting another person so that one can keep one's bacteria within one's own, one's own pocket. Don't need to give to other person. Swamiji used to say that those days, now I think of him. Anyway, so actually, that is why good person, bad person, wrong person, right person, which I always think, say speaking, nobody is wrong, nobody is bad. Yes, the badness, wrongness, or goodness, all this is because of what Vedanta Shastram says. What is that which causes the evil? We say people are evil beings. Who is evil? Really speaking, the source of any evil behavior, evil nature is ignorance. Ignorance is the only source of anything bad, any evil. There's no, other than ajnanam, other than ignorance, there's no such thing called evil at all. It is as long as ajnanam is, it is the ignorance. Ignorance of the truth, obtaining as ignorance of self alone, contributing for this common human fundamental problem of sense of smallness, sense of inadequacy, sense of insecurity centered on I, expresses itself in the form of all sixfold enemies. Six enemies, inner enemies, rag, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya. Okay, these are the six enemies which the every mind has these six enemies in the emotions, in terms, six enemies in terms of emotions, and the proportion vary from person to person, the degree and intensity vary from person to person, but all human beings have these sixfold enemies. Okay, and all these six enemies were they called enemies because they contribute for mental disturbance, mental discomfort, and the discomfort is disease, sickness, and the unhappiness. They contribute for mental disturbance, discomfort, unhappiness. Therefore, they are known as enemies. In fact, what are these six enemies? They are nothing but expressions. Okay, expressions of the common human fundamental problem of sense of smallness, sense of inadequacy, sense of insecurity centered on I, caused by ignorance. Therefore, ignorance alone is the root cause of any evil, the source of any evil. Otherwise, there is no evil. Okay? Therefore, what Shastram says, if a person works, understands his problem, then you will not find fault with others, because you can understand your own problem first. When you understand your problem, why there is jealousy, hatred, anger in you, the same reason, ultimately, the nimittam may be different. What, that which is instrumental, what is instrumental to trigger your anger and desire may be different. The instruments are different, which trigger the emotions from your subconscious mind. All these six enemies are always there in subconscious. In your subconscious, dormant and latent, they become triggered and they surface. The triggering instruments may vary from person to person, but all of them are there underneath, dormant in everyone's subconscious. How long will they be there? As long as ajnanam is. Therefore, whosoever mind, in whichever mind, all these emotions, in any degree of emotions, any degree of emotions, they rise, they get triggered. Doesn't matter. The root cause is ignorance. Therefore, if this ignorance is resolved, Dushtatma becomes Mahatma. The wicked, crooked, wicked fellow becomes Mahatma when this ajnanam, ajnana, rakshasa is destroyed. Then there's no more. That's why Bhagavan, man becomes God. Ajnana nashe, there's a Mahatma. Mahatmanaha udayaha. Mahatma is there. Your Shastram says, resolve, understand what ignorance is, then see that ignorance is resolved, thereby, you can see Bhagavan everywhere. Paripashyanti. Pashyanti means see. Paripashyanti means see. What do they see? Wise people see Paramatma, Bhagavan, everywhere in the form of manifest consciousness, which they have recognized as their own Swarupam in their mind. Okay? This is the meaning of this verse. Okay. So, what this mantra says, not only that, Anandamayam, Anandarupam, Amritam, Yad Vibhanti. We have seen the meaning of the word Tadvijnanena Paripashyanti. Tadvijnanena, by recognition of the consciousness obtaining as their own self, they see Paramatma everywhere. Okay, then Anandarupam Amritam Yad Vibhati. This is the name. So, Anandarupam Yad Vibhati. And when they see Bhagavan, Paramatma, Parambrahma everywhere, after having recognized Paramatma in the form of consciousness as the truth of I, then that Paramatma alone is what? In the form of that Paramatma is Bhagavan, is not in any form. All the forms are the only formless consciousness. So, Anandarupam. Consciousness, and the consciousness is of the nature of fullness. Anandaha. The word ananda is a confusing word, okay? People think anandaha means what? Bliss. No, anandaha does not mean bliss. Anandaha means happiness. What is happiness? Happiness is expression of fullness is happiness. Okay? Anandaha means fullness. Fullness means what? Being all pervasive, being full is the nature of the reality. So consciousness need not do anything to fill the cosmos. Consciousness, nothing subtler than consciousness, nothing beyond consciousness. Consciousness happens, reality obtaining in the form of consciousness happens to be the subtlest, all pervasive. Ultimate truth is of the nature of fullness. thereby it's also happiness. Therefore, they say Anandarupam. The mantra says Anandarupam Amrutam Yad Vibhati. Then Amrutam, it is Bhagavan, is very much there in the realm of consciousness, which is of the nature of fullness. And Amrutam Vibhati. Okay, what does the word Amrutam mean? Okay, Amrutam Vibhati means, Amrutam means eternally, timelessly, immortally. Okay, Vibhati means, Amrutam implies immortality. Immortality means what? Without coming, without going, without changing, timelessly, beginningless, endless, changeless, immortal reality is consciousness. That consciousness is in the form of timeless. The consciousness is of the nature of fullness and timelessness, immortality. And they undersee that Bhagavan in the form of immortal, timeless consciousness, which is of the nature of fullness. Everywhere they see this Bhagavan. Okay? This is the content of this verse. In fact, they do not say a second thing other than Brahman. That we'll see later on. Next mantra. Vidyate hridaya granthihi. Vidyate hridaya granthihi. Chidyante sarva samshayah. Kshiyante chasya karmani. Sarvam dishte paravare. One thing you must remember is that this existence, consciousness, fullness, happiness, limitlessness, all these words are synonymous in the Vedanta Shastra. All these words imply only the reality, abstract reality, in terms of its nature. Now, vidyate hridaya granthihi, chidyante sarva samshayah, kshiyante chasya karmani, tasmin drishte paravare, vidyate hridaya granthihi, chidyante sarva samshayah, kshiyante chasya karmani, tasmin drishte paravare. Tasmin dishte paravare. Now what is, and in this eighth mantra, in between, Upanishad is going to discuss the topic of knowledge in the following mantras also. The ninth mantra, tenth mantra, 11th mantra. We have totally 11 mantras in the second section or second mundaka. All the following three mantras also present the subject matter of knowledge, like the mantras you already seen. All these verses repeatedly reveal the nature of the only reality which lends existence to the whole world, which is there in your consciousness, in every, which is available for recognition in every mind as one's own self. All the mantras discuss only the subject matter of knowledge of the truth. But it's only the eighth mantra is the only mantra which presents the Palashruti. It's called a Palashruti mantra. This mantra, in before, see, sometimes, you know, when the functions are conducted and they want to give vote of thanks before the program gets over, you know why? The program gets over when people go away. They won't stay for listening to vote of thanks. People are so restless. So they're very clever. Nice, nice tukra songs they'll keep for the last. And before they finish Tukura songs, before finish the music concert, they'll do the vote of thanks and everything, and garlanding everything. People have to wait patiently. They won't go. Like that, Upanishad also thought, once we finish subject matter of the Jnanam, people won't be interested. So Palashruti wants to present in between. Okay? Palashruti comes in between. Again, it's going to discuss the topic of Jnanam in the following mantras also. All beautiful mantras. Okay. The Palashruti comes, what is it? Bhidyate hridaya granthihi, chidyante sarva samshayaha, kshiyante chasya karmani, tasmin drishte paravare. Therefore, what we'll do, we will also keep it for the last, okay? After doing 9th, 10th and 11th mantras, we will come back to this 8th mantra to do the Palashruti. It's okay? Now, let me read this mantra. Hiranmaye pare koshe virajam brahma nishkalam. So, I'm going to 9th mantra now. After finishing 9th, 10th and 11th, we'll come back to Palashruti. Hiranmaye pare koshe virajam brahma nishkalam. Hiranmaye pare koshe virajam brahma nishkalam. Tachubram jyotisham. Jyoti tachubram jyotisham jyotihi. Tachubram jyotisham jyotihi. Tad yadatma vido viduhu. Hiranmaye patre, hiranmaye pare koshe. Hiranmaye pare koshe. I really want you to memorize this 11 mantras, definitely. If possible, the whole Upanishad. If not possible, at least this 11 mantras, you must memorize. I'm not saying you must, it's good for you to memorize. Hiranmaye pare koshe. Virajam brahma nishkalam. Tachubram jyotishan jyotihi. Tadyadatma vido viduhu. Tachubran jyotishan jyotihi. Tad yadatma vido viduhu. You can say it together also. Tachubran jyotishan jyotis tad. Tadyadatma vido viduhu. Tachubran jyotishan jyotis tad. Yadatma vido viduhu. Hiranmaye pare koshe virajam brahma nishkalam tachubram jyotishan jyotistad yadatma vido viduhu. Okay. So what does Bhagavan, this Upanishad, say in this mantra? See, as I said, there are four stages involved in recognizing this reality, obtaining as one's own self. First, a person understands this consciousness, and the consciousness is there in me, within me, within the body, mind's complex. Taking the body, mind's complex also as the self, including the body, mind's complex. The person sees this consciousness in oneself. And then later on the person understands that consciousness is distinct from this, okay, body imagines complex. First there is, he understands consciousness is, then consciousness is in me, then he says what? Finally he says, I am the consciousness. And the fourth is what? That conscious, I the consciousness am non-separate from Bhagavan. I the consciousness am, I am consciousness is one level of understanding. I the consciousness am Bhagavan the whole also. That is the final stage of understanding of Bhagavan, which is said to be Bhagavat Sakshatkaraha. Okay. Bhagavat Sakshatkaraha means people think Bhagavan should come and stand in front of Hanka Chakra Gadadari or Shula Pani Gadayada Pani. No. This is the real Bhagavad Sakshatkara. Okay. This is the, I understand the truth. I claim the truth as myself. then I see the truth being Ishvara. This is Bhagavad Sakshatkar. This is the fourth level of, final level of understanding of Bhagavan, obtaining in the form of truth. Okay, if we say Bhagavan, the consciousness, Bhagavan in terms of consciousness is in me, if I say in me, Bhagavan is in me, consciousness is in me, means only still there's understanding, still there's a third level of understanding. So then the body, mind and complex become included in the I. Whereas there's a time you distinguish the consciousness from body, mind and complex. You distinguish Bhagavan in the form of pure consciousness, distinguishing from body, mind and complex. But here, finally, Vedanta Shastram brings to light the fact that what now? The I sense, the single first person singular pronoun I sense must be without any reluctance, without any hesitation, must be dragged, must be shifted from the body, mind, sense organs, physiological functions to everything, all the material aspects, and including the mind. You should drag, I sense must be shifted from the mind, all the thoughts also, ankara also. It should be resolved only in pure consciousness. Which means one must see the formless abstract consciousness as the truth of I. Shuddham Chaitanyam alone should be seen, claimed as the content of I. So one doesn't attain here. One claims consciousness already which is available for recognition as one's own self. I am consciousness, I am Atma. So initially, he will think what? That is, first of all, the person understands there is a consciousness. Then he thinks the consciousness is in the body, mind and complex. And there's an understanding that he is a mixture of both body and consciousness. And finally, only he says what he distinguishes, that pure consciousness, which has to be intellectually distinguishable, not physically separated. Okay, now let me come to an important lesson now. What does in this mantra Upanishad say? The thing is, there must be on what logic do we claim, or can we claim the consciousness as the content of I? On what basis can we claim consciousness as the content of I? What is the logic involved in claiming consciousness as the content of I? Please listen. This is an important lesson. See, we have to observe the language we use. We must observe. If we observe, we use different pronouns to refer to anything and everything other than one's own self. Okay, every individual uses any pronoun other than the first person singular pronoun I to refer to anything and everything in the world. That, this, she, he, that, it, me, that. The first person singular pronoun alone is used by every individual. Every individual uses the same first person singular pronoun I to refer to one's own self. And when does this person use this? If you ask, you can say, when do you use first person singular pronoun I? The Upanishad asks us, what will we say? No, I have been using this first person singular pronoun I throughout my life. Okay, from my childhood, from the time I picked up ahankara, from the time I started speaking, saying I, okay, I think from you said terrible too. At the age of two, every individual is picking up ahankara chips. From that time onwards, we have been using this first person singular pronoun I. It is, let me use singular, okay. I have been using it throughout my life and without making any change. Until the death, the person uses the first person singular pronoun I only to refer to oneself. See, when when you were a baby, when you were a child, when you were growing up, when you were young, when you were middle-aged, when you get old also, all throughout, the I alone is being used to refer to yourself. So, what happens? The physical body keeps growing. The physical body keeps on changing. And even maturity level, emotional maturity level also changes. But I doesn't change. The first person singular pronoun which is used by me is not changed at all. No individual changes this I. Therefore, what it means is, this I, the first person singular pronoun I, does not change at all. Even when the person's physical body changes, the stages change, the growth change. This change. The change is happening. I doesn't change at all. Therefore, this unchanging I must correspond to the changeless aspect of the individual. Is it clear? The changes must correspond to the changeless aspect of the individual. So every individual is a composite of two factors. Changing aspect, the changeless aspect. Atma aspect, anatma aspect. No individual is a pure consciousness. No individual is a pure matter. Every individual human being is what? Every individual living being is a mixture of two aspects. Atma, anatma, consciousness, matter, changing, changeless aspects. And the I, the first person singular pronoun used from childhood is not at all changed. Therefore, it must correspond to the changeless aspect of the individual, not the changing aspect of the individual. Therefore, bodied changing aspect cannot be the content of I. Mind changing aspect cannot be the content of I. Only the consciousness, changeless aspect alone must be the content of I. This is the logic. Is it clear? Okay. Therefore, so Vedanta, in fact, presents this fact. If I, the first person singular pronoun, is unchanging, changeless I cannot be referring to the changing, constantly changing body, and the body even one day it will fall apart also. Whereas I, you know, one thing, I doesn't change even after death, that we know that very well. I doesn't change even after death. That's why Swamiji used to ask. Suppose before you were born, you were there or not? Ask his question. If I ask you, were you there before you were born? What will you say? No, this is my date of birth. Before this period, I was not there. I was not there. That's why I could not attend my mother's parents' wedding. I was, before the date of my birth, I was not there. No, you were not with this physical body mansions complex, but you were very much there even before the birth of this physical body mind complex. Was not this body was not there, mind was also there. You know that the body alone was not there. The body, you assumed that you were born newly, you were born with the body newly, but really speaking, you were there even before the birth. How do you know? Suppose you said, I know I was not there. That itself is enough. If you know you were, you must have been there. Pooja Swamiji, this is, okay. If you know you were not there, how do you know you were not there? To know that you were not here before your birth, you must have been there. No, don't want to break your heads. Anyway, at least this is clear, isn't it? This is amazing. I tell you, Pooja Swamiji, there's no teacher in the world who can wear Swamiji's shoes. A great teacher who alone could give vision. There's so many great teachers, so many great, great, great teachers. But giving vision, the teaching, Swamiji taught this, teaching nothing but giving vision. The teacher is the one who makes the student see what the teacher sees. Then it's teaching. If I make you believe what I say, it is preaching. If I make you see what I see, it is teaching. This is what Swamiji used to say. Isn't it? So I'm sure this you understood the logic behind why consciousness alone should be claimed as the truth content of I, not the material body mind complex aspect. Okay, we had to move on to the next mantra. Okay, not next mantra, same mantra. I had to see till the meaning of Hiranmaye Pare Koshe Virajam Brahma Nishkalam Tachubram Jyotisham Jyotisham Jyotihi Tad Yadatma Vido Viduhu. And here, Brahma is the word used to mean imply the reality. What is Brahma? The Nishkalam Brahma. Okay, Nishkalam means sparkless, undivided, indivisible. Here, every word reveals the nature of reality. Nishkalam Brahma. Nishkalam means what? Partless, indivisible, undivided, partless whole. What is that? This consciousness. They said, unwedded, invisible, partless whole, Nishkalam Brahma. And therefore, what is we see, to say it is Brahma of this Brahma, spend many time, Brihat Taratwat Brahma, Brihat Tamatwat Brahma. Okay. Brihattam means what? It's the biggest, greatest. How can you say what is greatest, what is biggest? So, in this world, including subject to all visions. Subject to everything. Everything has an end. Therefore, time. And one thing is then, one time is not the other time. Which is then, object is different from every other object. அத்தி கரிசன் தான்.